Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kauf with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Tuesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Juwan Howard got suspended. We'll hit that at the end of the show. Five games the rest of the regular season. Was it enough? Aaron Rodgers is a weirdo, and he's stirring the pot last night with an Instagram post. It was almost like a farewell letter. Was it farewell from the Packers or farewell from the NFL? Or is he just messing with everybody? There's no telling. We'll hit some of that at the end of the show. Lots of high school hoops coming up. We've got Canute Trojanette head coach Tatum Riddling at 9:15, so coming up right here off the top. We'll talk to her about her Trojanette's path into the area tournament. They play Oklahoma Christian Academy on Thursday night down there in Cache, so we'll talk to her about how her year has gone, first year there at Canute, and making their way into the area tournament last night. Does anybody have any idea if the Arapahoe-Butler-Turpin game is over yet? Are they still playing? Are Jared and Matt still on the road home?
Amazing.
What an incredible game. Well played, except for one area of the game, which I know both teams will be kicking themselves. Turpin less because they ended up pulling it out. But there was one part of that game that was not as crisp as the rest of it. And it's a lesson for everybody watching, little kids up to seniors that are still playing. You got to make your free throws.
I think all the parents know what you're going
to
say.
You got to make your free throws.
And coaches, yes.
So we'll talk about those games. The Arapo boys, a really good game. Then the two Class B schools. Looky there. We expected, everybody in the world expected Hammond to be in the area final.
Correct.
Only one of us expected Leedy to be there.
This is correct.
225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com. The other is download the app. The Paragon app has all things Paragon. Three radio stations. You got the Penny News. Brand new edition of the Penny News. We'll hit the website tonight at midnight, thepennynews.com. Of course, Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. This is the height of Paragon TV right now with these high school basketball playoffs heading into the area round. A couple of teams are just one win away from a state tournament berth. Some others have a little bit longer path to go, but still alive trying to get to the Class A and B state tournaments. Of course, Big Elk TV will have the Elkettes and the Big Elks. Thursday afternoon regional action from Kingfisher. And the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, go back and check us out on KADSAM.com, or you can find us on iTunes. How are you, Jared?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am not near as appreciative of the weather as I was yesterday.
Nah.
It's like
opposite.
Totally different day. And
it's like we were on one side of the world or one part of the world yesterday. And then we woke up in Siberia or
something.
It's
like we flew home. We were like on last day of vacation yesterday.
Exactly.
And then flew home.
Yeah.
And it was like, ah, missed that weather.
Yeah.
Much nicer.
Oh, well.
All right. So you weren't quite as in tune with that game last night as I was.
I got home.
I had
other things going, watching scrimmage. I guess it's scrimmage. More of a game, but... And by the time I got home, honestly, I was tuned out because it was Monday, thinking there's no game.
Right.
You know, I just kind of, and then you text me like, well, now I will. And I turned it on and you had to cue me in. They're in their fifth overtime. I just thought, one overtime. Oh, wow. They got started late. This game's taking forever. Nah, fifth overtime.
One of my favorite parts of the way that was going was watching the overtime. And then when it got to about the second, maybe the third overtime, I thought to myself, I wonder where the Leedy boys game is now. And then I actually heard Jared Cudd say, just got a text, Leedy boys in the third quarter. That was like during the third or fourth overtime. And then by the time you could tell that Turpin was going to win that game, and I flipped it over, and I think there was 4 minutes and 33 seconds left on the clock in the fourth quarter of the Leedy boys game.
Unbelievable.
When it was, and there was still like another minute to play, but Turpin had finally kind of pulled away. It was a fun game to watch. It was a fun game throughout. The only part of it was the free throw shooting for both teams. I think Gabe just said that Matt tallied up 42 of 85 combined. And it was like every overtime went exactly the same way to me. Rapo would get the tip. Rapo would go score. They'd get ahead. And then they would miss some free throws, or they might turn it over or just miss a shot. Turpin would get it back, force a foul, and it would take them, you know, depending on how many points it was. Sometimes, you know, I think there was an and one early in one of the overtimes for Arapaho, made him go up three. So it would take three more trips down the floor of Turpin splitting free throws to finally tie it. But somehow, some way, at the end of every one of those overtimes and regulation, Turpin magically had the ball. You know, it was just like, okay, now they got to get in. To their credit, Arapaho got stop after stop after stop at the end of those games, at the end of the regulation and overtimes to keep going. And then by the end, I mean, Arapaho Butler, they had so many. I mean, the whole starting five was on the bench. I thought they did yeoman's work without Katie Edlin. I mean, obviously the star of stars on that team. She fouled out in the first overtime, and I thought to myself, ooh. That's not good news, but give the Lady Indians credit. They were in position to win in basically every one of those overtimes, but you know, it was well played outside of free throw shooting. I mean, there was they all run together so much, but I think it was. Did you see the sequence at the end of one of those overtimes where the technical happened?
No.
Okay, so Arapaho Butler is up two, I believe. And they get a foul called for free throws, and then they get a technical for slamming the ball down. I mean, it was just one of those, you know, reactionary things. And so that means Turpin gets four free throws. You know what? It might have been a one-point game. It was a one-point game because it's a one-point game. Turpin gets four free throws and the ball back. And by the time that entire sequence was over, it was just tied. Because they went 1-for-4 from the line, and they might have even went 1-for-6, or they missed a shot. No, Arapaho might have taken a charge when they got the ball back. But anyway, it was just wild. It was no one could seem to make the difference. And then finally, in that fifth overtime, Turpin went to the free throw line, and they made some, and that was enough.
You know, in their defense, both teams. I'm not trying to knock on one over the other, but. Those girls' defense, could stamina have been a problem with those free throws in the overtime?
Oh, I'm sure.
You know what I mean?
And pressure. Listen, I mean, everybody knows what's on the line.
Yeah.
It's just an observation. I'm not being critical of either one of them. It's just I know right now they're sitting over there in class at Arapaho going, dang it. It was just free throws. Like, we just needed to make another one at any point in – the nine quarters, you know, I mean, it shows you. And like Wyatt and I were sitting there talking,
I had to go to class this morning.
Oh, I know. And I was telling him, I said, this is a great learning lesson. You're sitting here watching this. And what was the, and he said, well, they just didn't make their free throws. I was like, yeah, I mean, it's that simple. Like when at the end of every practice, you're having to shoot free throws to keep from running and all that kind of stuff. There's a reason for it. Now it's not the same pressure as trying to knock one down to win the regional tournament, but there is some added pressure there with all those games those coaches play at the end of the period or the end of the practice or whatever to keep you, you know, either you make them both or you run a suicide. You know, there's depending on how the practice was, that really is not what a lot of people want to do at the end. And so that kind of obviously tries to simulate it, but man, it was fun. It was a fun game. It was funny because I think Treasure said this, and it may have just been because it was Monday, because it is that week, but it felt like area last night.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like regionals. It felt like area. And for that game to go clear to five overtimes really kind of enhanced that feeling. Then, you know, the boys follow up against Texoma. That was a whale of a game, too, that Arapo Butler couldn't quite squeeze away and win. We'll talk about some of the other results from around the area. I know there was a huge upset in Class A girls last night I know neither one of us saw coming. That was almost go back to Saturday. You know, Navajo almost did it too. So maybe the Class A girls has been a foregone conclusion for 6 years now, going into the state tournament, 4 for Sealing, 2 for Hydro Weekly.
Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe that's going to be more of a fun tournament than we thought.
After Saturday, even though Hydro pulled it out the way they did, I thought, man, I was high on Sealing about mid-season, and now I'm looking pretty good. And then Sealing gets beat by Garber girls last night. You're right. It might be a little bit more wide open than what
maybe
we think.
Maybe it is.
Were those wake-up calls for both those teams? You never know.
I mean, yeah, there they are. I was going to say, Garber not ranked. Garber's ranked 13th.
They're used to getting this far. And
they have
used
won
to
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12,
ranked
13,
wins here?
14, 15, 16 in a row.
Oh, well, my goodness. They don't know how to lose. And it was at Garber. I mean, that always helps.
They've been rolling. Yep. But also, Class B, as I mentioned, Hammond easily over Boise City. It was the one game that really wasn't competitive, at least on the Paragon TV. 4 games, you know,
Lee Boy. Didn't look like it would have been. I mean, it was just a mismatch from start to finish.
But Friday night ought to be a good one up in Woodward. Hammond Arnett.
That's going to be fun.
Hammond and Arnett, as Arnett blew away O'Keen 69-40.
Wow.
Close game for a little bit. We were getting
O'Keen
text messages.
Team that
beat
LaMega.
Yeah.
That O'Keen and Arnett just blew them out.
69-40 was the score, I believe.
Well, I'll get your attention.
I think just judging by the text messages we got, Bayless went nuts as the game went along. They've won a ton in a row, too. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 in a row for Arnett.
Very good.
That's that area final.
What looked like might be an easy path for Hammond. I mean, we liked Arnett, but we thought.
Yeah, it came down to, I think you picked him and I picked O'Keen to go to the state tournament.
Out of that area? Yeah, I had Hammond and Arnett.
Yeah. I had Arnett and I scratched him out because I saw O'Keen and I remember them beating LaMega.
Man. Interesting.
All off of one game. I like my position,
that's
though.
That's fool's gold, brother.
I like my position, though. I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Coming back through.
Okay.
If they can have that rematch and Arnett falls to Hammond, they're down, they're disappointed, have to come back Saturday. We see it all the time. It's hard to win that Saturday game. And Leedy will play Mountain View Godibo. Mountain View Godibo had a tough one. Only a 3-point win against Goodwell, 43-40 in Class B boys. So that'll be the
You know Carpenter's already looking at that film.
The two area finals will be Hammond and Arnett on the girls' side, Leedy and Mountain View Godibo on the boys in that Class B area. That's the only area finals we got. Everybody else is down in the consolation bracket. Both Arapahoes, both Canutes are there fighting back through the consolation bracket. Speaking of Canute, we got to make a phone call.
Try it. I cornered her last night.
Did you like wrestle the ball away from Beckett and say, you can't dribble unless your mom comes on our show?
For Bracket? No, I...
Bracket?
I got just was walking, hey. Just kind of got her in a corner and said, hey, yeah, won't you come on with this? She goes, oh, okay, when? I can hear the shake. It's like, hey, we're just going to talk basketball.
It'll be now.
Jared Atha, Aaron Kalk on this chilly, chilly Tuesday. But, man, the basketball playoffs heating up. Finally turned the corner after last night. Everybody done with their region, now moving on to the area tournament. One of those teams in the area tournament in Class A Area 3 is the Canute Trojanettes. With us right now is the head coach of the Trojanettes, Tatum Ridling, her first year in Canute. Very successful first year, so far 18-9. I say so far, coach, because you're not done yet. You guys had a nice weekend over in Hydro. First off, coach, talk about that weekend. Sure, the Burns Flat losing the Navajo was tough, but it was a close loss. But I tough was the word that kept ringing through my head with your girls in those two games over in Hydro. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yes, for sure. I was really proud of how they competed and just came out and played hard and never gave up, even when things got tough. They just kind of battled through. So I was really proud of how they stepped up and played.
What were you thinking in the Union City game on Friday, where going into the third quarter, or excuse me, the fourth quarter after the third quarter, down the way your team was, and how they responded? What was going through your head?
That was huge. I was definitely just trying to keep my composure. I feel like kids, if they see me getting rattled, they get rattled. I've just been talking to them about believing the whole year. You got to believe that it can happen. And we didn't shoot the ball particularly well those first three quarters, and I just kept telling them it's going to happen. You're going to hit shots, you know. And they kept believing. They never gave up, and we kind of, our defense turned into our offense. We caused some turnovers and kind of got a little bit of rhythm going and energy. And so I think that kind of all boiled over and helped us go into that big quarter. I think we scored 23 in that fourth quarter, so that was huge for us.
Absolutely, and that offense carried over into Saturday, taking on Sterling, winning that one, going away 56-41. Real quick, just individually this past weekend, Jade Gray's performance, I mean, it didn't show up on the stat line, but she hit some big shots. But I think the storyline was she kind of twisted up her ankle against Union City, came back, gave it a go on a Saturday. Talk about her performance and just, you know, her toughness. Again, there's that word again, tough.
Yes, no, it was huge. I actually didn't even get to see the play. I just turned around and saw her down, but I mean, her ankle, she got it good. It's definitely swollen, but I was so proud of her just putting her team first and putting that, you know, in the back of her mind and stepping up. I actually had to put her back in that Union City game and, you know, pushing through. And I know it's painful and those things hurt, but just the toughness of all these girls. I mean, all of them, they come on that floor and they just fight and compete the whole entire time. So that's huge. And then stepping in into that next game on Saturday, and I don't think you would have even known her ankle was blown the way she played. So it was big, big time for her, and I love to see the toughness of those girls out there.
Is she good to go on Thursday?
Oh, yes. We're ready to roll.
How big was it to get through this region? And something me and Aaron always kind of talk about is, you know, getting that extra week of practice, playing deep in the playoffs. It's not – I mean, obviously it's huge for this season, but it's huge for the program moving forward. How big is that for you?
It's, you know, it's been one of our goals. We kind of talked at the beginning of the season, things that we want to accomplish this year, and making it to the area tournament was one of them. And I think these girls still have so much fight left in them. I think that we're going to come in on Thursday and really compete with OCA. They're a good ball club, but I have no doubt that we're going to go in there and give them a game.
You mentioned Oklahoma Christian Academy, your next opponent, ranked 7th in Class A. They got 19 wins, 6 losses. I was looking at their schedule earlier this morning. They don't play a lot of teams in Class A. You know, they're in that metro area, so they have to. They play a lot of these tough tournaments. Kingfisher tournament stands out. Dale tournament. You're playing. They're playing 2A teams, 3A teams. They've even some 6A teams thrown in there. Does that concern you with how battle tested they are?
I always tell my girls, playoff time is a game of upsets. You never know what's going to happen in the playoffs. So, not to look at those things. Just focus on what we need to do, and you know, execute our game plan. And at the end of the day, I feel like you can go compete with anybody if you go in and hook up and you just, you know, battle with them. And so that's our mindset going in, not looking at their necessarily who they played or their record, but just going in and playing our game and taking care of our business and competing.
Hey, Coach, it's Aaron. Talking to Tatum Ridling, the head coach of the Canute Trojanettes. It seems to me, just watching you guys from afar throughout the year, most nights, you have the best player on the floor. Tell us about Kylie Smith and the way that she's grown through her years now into her junior season.
She is just a pure athlete. You can't say enough about her. Her speed is something I've never seen before. You know, people trying to keep her in front, and she's kind of coming into her own, trying to really step up and use her mid-range game a little bit more. And that's something that we kind of talked about this year, of adding to her game of, you know, if they take that away, being confident, stepping up and hitting that mid-range jumper. But just her defense ability too, the steals, you know, jumping past lanes and being able to get to the basket, it's unbelievable how quick she is and how athletic she is.
It's easy to run an offense when she gets behind the defense on rebounds and then she gets going. It's just, it is fun to watch, especially when she gets going, like when she got going against against Sterling on Saturday, and then how she kind of finished that game. And she's just such a delight to watch. other players, I want to talk about your senior starter out there, Abby Janning. What I've seen and heard this year, I keep going back to the word tough, but, man, how man, she was dang near clothesline the other night, and her to stay, you know, keep her composure. But what I've really enjoyed about her is her outside shot. I mean, her defense is phenomenal, but her, you know, when she starts hitting from outside, like against Hammond, it really makes it tougher on the other team. Talk about Abby and her leadership role this year.
Man, she has really stepped up this year and just added to her game, and the confidence of being willing to score the ball and shoot the ball. You know, I didn't necessarily know much about him last year, you know, besides when I played him, but everyone always tells me she didn't look to score, she looked to score. And I just told him, we got to be threats, all five. You got to be threats outside here. If you don't have five people willing to score the ball, you know, you're easy to defend. So just believing and working on those things, working on your shot so that when you are in the game, you're confident of knocking it down. And so I just try to teach them that, talk to them about believing in themselves. And she's really came into her own and believed in that and been huge for us in a lot of games this year of stepping up and hitting outside shots.
And my final thoughts on, or final question, I guess, is the what I was impressed with on Friday, the crowd that showed up. There's a spirit bus, the student section that showed up. Do you notice that? Do the girls notice that, and does that help them? Does that fuel them?
I definitely think it fuels them. I think they feel the excitement from the fans. Our fans were amazing. It was so loud in there. At times, I don't know if they could even hear me yelling. But I think it definitely feels it. Makes the atmosphere so much more fun, and you just really get that playoff feel with the fans like that. So, yeah, I think it fuels them and brings excitement to them.
No offense, Coach, but I could hear you yelling no matter how many fans are in the building. Even way up there where I was sitting at Hydro. But
you got Oklahoma Christian Academy. I actually have one of my college roommates has young kids in that program, in that school. He wants to know what your thoughts are on number 30, Sydney Duncan, for Oklahoma Christian Academy in the film you've seen.
Oh, she's going to be a tough one. They're all tough. I mean, they have five starters out there that we're going to have to defend really well. But she is a great player, great shooter, gets the hole really well, and definitely has the size. So, yeah, she's one that we definitely have to key on and take care of. But that's kind of all five of them. You know, we're going to have to – our defense is going to have to be a huge presence for us on Thursday.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully weather will hold off long enough where we can get this in all on time and get three wins and get to the big house. Coach, thanks for being on with us. I got a final question, though. How come Brackett is not shooting threes in the game when I see you're doing it in practice?
She is not allowed to pull that three-point shot yet.
Keep getting on her daddy to do it, and he's like, I don't think I could tell her to. I don't think her mom's going to let her do it.
No.
Well, Coach, again, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate you.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much. Canute Trojanettes head coach Tatum Ridling joining us for a few minutes here ahead of their game on Thursday evening, right down in Cache, 6:30, Oklahoma Christian Academy against the Canute Trojanettes. Let's see. Do you have the schedule in front of you for everybody?
That's coming up?
Yeah.
I haven't sat down and mapped that out just yet.
The only ones I'm not
I know about the Canute. Sure. I know you mentioned Hammond girls.
Okay, here we go. I got it.
You got it? Go for it.
I do have it. So, yeah. So, the two Canute games will be Thursday night. Oklahoma Christian Academy at 6:30 for the girls, and the Calumet will be the boys game. Arapahoe Butler, their boys will play in the afternoon. They'll get Sealing at 3:00 up there.
By the way, how about Visai beating Sealing boys?
Yeah, and then Visai was knocked off by Garber last night. So that area is complete. Texoma Garber will be the area final, and then you got Moreland and Visai on one at 8:00, and then the Arapahoe Butler Sealing game will be at 3:00. On the girls' side, I saw the winner of this. I think it was Laverne. Rapo Butler plays at 1:30, and I think they play Laverne instead of Fargo Gage Ford Supply. I'll effort that.
Yeah, they haven't updated the OSSA.
Yeah, the boys has. The girls has.
The boys has? Yeah. The girls, well, maybe because that five overtime game.
Is it still going? Somebody turn on Paragon TV. Go to their Rapo channel and see if that game is still going.
By the way, those guys were fun to watch last night. Calling the game. Matty Oaks and
it was a blast.
And Jared Cudd, right?
Yes.
They were good call and unfortunate other side of the loss, but It was just a fun game. Fun game. Laverne. You hate that you hate that there is a loser in a game like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you wish it was on Friday night so those guys can get some sleep this morning. But, man, tough one.
Yeah, Laverne did beat Fargo Gage Ford Supply. I was pretty sure I saw that.
Okay.
So it'll be Laverne and Arapahoe Butler at 1:30. The 6:30 game there will be Thomas and Sealing. And then the area final is Turpin versus Garber in that Class A. So that's Thursday. And then, of course, Elk City will be playing in the regional tournament on Thursday, 1:30 and 3 against Hera. And then also we have Thursday night action with Merritt in the 2A regional tournament. They'll have they both play with Tonga. So it'll be a 6:30 for the Merritt girls, 8 o'clock for the Merritt boys.
And that one is in Fairview?
It's in Fairview, okay. Yes. They're in Fairview the whole time. The other side of that is Sayre and Hooker. That's the matchup in both the boys and girls as well. In the other winners bracket games there in that 2A regional. So they are going to play in Hooker. Sayre goes to Hooker, but Merritt will be at Fairview. And then they all meet at Fairview as the main side after those Friday games, or after those Thursday night games. I think that's everybody, isn't it? Was Leedy girls fell yesterday to Tyrone, 39-23, so they were eliminated. Hammond boys were beaten as well. Indiahoma got them. Now, Hammond came roaring back in the fourth quarter, cut that all the way down to 4, I think, at one point.
Wow.
From a double-digit lead, but just couldn't quite get over that hump there against Indiahoma. They fell 50-43, I think, was the final there. So those two teams were eliminated yesterday. The two Eric teams were eliminated on Saturday in the regional consolation finals. And that's everybody that kind of was moving on through the regional. So you got Leedy boys, Hammond girls, both Arapahoes, both Canutes are what's left, at least for the Paragon TV schools. I'm excited about that Arnett game, Arnett-Hammond. I'm very excited to see what Arnett's got for Hammond, because the Lady Warriors have just rolled through the playoffs so far.
Sometimes if you're Hammond, or if you're a team like Hammond, you want that test. Does that make sense?
You'd rather have it in case things don't go well on Friday,
right,
versus next week.
I'm not saying you want a loss, but you want that test. You want your back against the wall. You want to get punched a couple times to see how you can take it.
Well, and the truth is, and nobody's going to look this far down the line except for us, because that's what we're here for. There's also going to be in the back of your mind thinking, going in as a winner would more than likely separate us from Omega till the finals.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that.
You know?
Right.
With being number one and being number two all season long, basically.
Pretty much.
That those two teams would seemingly be put away from each other as if they both go in as winners of areas into the state tournament. And so that's something that it's not going to be the top of everybody's mind, but it certainly is on mine, because, you know, that's the matchup I think most have wanted to see throughout the year, right? Mm-hmm. Lakeba Sickles Duke will be in the area three, kind of a little bit of local flair there with Sentinel in that game. Mm-hmm. Sentinel was close on Friday night, 46-43, or Saturday night, I guess it was, 46-43 loss to the Duke boys. Sentinel girls got beat by 10 by Duke. So both Sentinel teams are down in the area consolation bracket, with Duke and Lakeba Sickles being the final on the girls' side. I can't remember who the boys is. It's, hit the wrong one. Roth. Oh, yeah, number one. How could we forget about them? So, what else? Wrapping up the high school basketball.
I think that's it. Now just we sit and wait. Hopefully the weather cooperates and we get this, like I said, on early or done on time. Because I could really be a problem moving forward if everything's delayed, or yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. It's the southeast part of the state, it looks like.
So the closer we get to it, the more it feels like we're okay. I mean, the National Weather Service, if you look at their kind of swath, it's a lot different than the local guys.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I've always heard this, and I believe it, and I would never want to be a weatherman, right?
Oh, no.
No. Because you never get credit when you're right.
That's correct.
You only hear it when you're wrong.
That is correct.
I know a little bit about that being in the news, too. Ice is hard to predict, is what I've always heard. They're kind of like, hey, we're flipping coins here. Ice is the hardest thing for them to predict. They can predict a day where it's going to be tornadic.
Oh, yeah. They're the best in the world at it.
They're the best day. Bet you're right. But the ice, man.
Well, here's the problem. It's because you have to be dead zero right on the temperature. Because it can be 33 on this side of the street and 32 on that side of the street, and they get ice and you don't.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's that fine a line sometimes.
Yeah.
And it does. Doesn't it always kind of seem like when it's ice? I mean, that makes sense because of the temp. But it's always straddling that line when it's supposed to be ice. So you either get rain. It's either cold rain or it's freezing rain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've told this story before. It's been, I don't know, last time we got ice, probably 2 or 3 years ago on a weekend. On a Saturday, we're sitting there at home, can't do anything because it's just horrible weather outside. You look across the street, and you kind of see the trees at the golf course, the branches kind of getting that glaze on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of like a mist, like a freezing mist at the time. And, you know, it's just one of those days where it's like foggy all day because it's misty or whatever. And so it starts out that way, and then, you know, an hour later, you kind of look over there, and you're like, oh, it's gone. Well, the temperature was 33 or 34 or whatever it was. So we've got no idea. And then church gets called off. We're like, what? For what? And we literally go a half a mile north, and it's like a winter wonderland,
yeah.
Like a skate rink. Yeah. You're like, oh, well, that's odd. And, you know, that's just how close the line was, literally, like the creek.
Well, just look last week when it was thunderstorm on one side of the state and snowstorm on the other.
And
we were literally right on the middle of it, felt like.
And what
we went to bed Wednesday night with thunderstorms and we're worrying. You're worrying about having to come in and cover a thunderstorm. And I'm hearing thunder and lightning and heavy rain. I wake up Thursday morning, it looked like Antarctica.
It's a blizzard.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we went through both of them. We got the thunderstorms
and then
the blizzard.
I just wrapped up Oklahoma weather in a nutshell right there.
Uh-huh. Well, it was 80 yesterday. It's 35 today.
Yes. So who knows what's going to happen on Thursday, but when would the OSSA say, when is the 0 hour for them to make a decision?
It's a great question. I think that hour gets pushed closer to game time now than it did last week.
Because
the time crunch is so much more now than it was last week.
You know, someone made a good point to me last night. Just because they're playing, and you know it better than I haven't studied it, and I can't remember from last year. I can't remember from yesterday. Expanding the dates on the state tournament to get everybody inside the big house doesn't mean everybody plays on Tuesday, does it?
No.
So if you think about that like that, if there is some one-day postponement, do you think they'd adjust to that? Listen, we had to have them play on Monday, so let's not play them until Wednesday.
It'd be interesting because I think they would try, but here's the problem. Everywhere there, so that would for that to work perfect, it would need to be like, say, Class A had an area that didn't finish on time,
mm-hmm.
whereas all the Bs did, or vice versa.
I see what you're saying.
But the problem is, a lot of times geographically, there's both in the same area.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like now. You know, Enid and Woodward.
You
got Enid and Woodward. You got Chickasha and Cash.
Well, yeah.
With A and B out here, over there it's the same, just a little bit. You know, it's different towns, but you've got. And I say that because sure, if like Class A couldn't finish until Monday, then I think the schedule would look a lot like it did last year. You start with Class B girls on Tuesday morning. You play six games, so. All of Class B girls, half of Class B boys played Tuesday. The other half of Class B boys played Wednesday, and then all of A girls. And then we started getting through the A boys, and then semifinals happened. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so in a perfect world, whoever, you know, whatever class didn't get to finish, then they can just be pushed back to Wednesday and Thursday. But the problem is usually both classes are kind of in the same geographic region for area, and it's hard for one to make it through and one finish and the other not. Now, it could actually work that way, except for the only problem is we would need to flip B. Because say if the B games were in Woodward and Cache, and the A games were in Enid and Chickasha, you know, there's a line there where you get further east, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But those are switched, so that doesn't work either because it's more diagonally from Chickasha to Woodward and then down from Enid to Cache in Class A. So I don't know what they're going to do if something happens. I really don't. The closer we get, it feels like Area 4 is the one that's going to be affected the most.
You're right.
You know, down there in the southeast corner up to I-40, you know, kind of that quadrant of the state from Oklahoma City south and east to Broken Bow.
Yes.
You know, somewhere in there that it feels like where the major problems could happen. And, you know, we'll just see. But it does feel like the closer we get to it, you know, for tomorrow, the less likely, you know, our area is going to be affected by what's happening.
Right.
And that could change by noon. You know,
yeah.
Things could slow down and who knows.
And I look at, you know, at least for my situation, going to Cache, who else has to go to Cache? Where are they coming from? You know, sure that Cache isn't, you know, let's hope it's not glazed in ice, but you know, OCA, you know, they're coming from Oklahoma City area, Edmond, I believe.
Uh-huh.
How is it there when they leave? How is it going to be when they get back? You know, that's something else they're going to have to consider, too. So,
no doubt.
I don't think it'll be a problem for Navajo to get the Cache.
Right. And, yeah, you know, we're thinking about us getting there or there.
Well, maybe Calumet, you know, but Calumet, they're coming from the west side of the city area. I mean, so there's.
I don't think, you know, last week we knew on Wednesday these things were getting postponed, right?
Right.
And, you know, the threats were a little bit more as far as snow, you know, the forecast were a little bit more concrete last week that helped make that decision probably, and the timeline obviously helped make that decision because there's plenty of time to get it all done. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't anticipate knowing anything tomorrow. Would you? I really wouldn't.
I'd be shocked if... Here, let me put it this way. If we get through tomorrow without hearing anything, I'm going to think everything is 100% on no matter what. As far as each, you know, our area that we're talking about. The one that you're talking about, Area 4, is the one, I think, the bigger question. I'd be shocked if I got here Thursday ready to, you know, getting ready to go, and then we hear, oh, everything's delayed by a day.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
That's
here.
Not happening. They don't do that the day of.
It might happen elsewhere, but it won't happen here.
Nah.
Because I just think because of the pushed up timeline of the state tournament being 5 days, I think they're going to want to wait and make sure they make the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
And in the right choice, meaning having to delay it. And then deciding what to do from there. Now, I'm sure they're already in rooms and have been last week.
Yeah.
With contingency plans and how, you know, what will happen, how will they navigate these situations? And so, you know, and maybe, you know, if it really kind of comes in tomorrow morning and they see around the state that it's affecting most everybody, I just can't imagine the Woodward one and even Enid, that they just don't seem like it's always like the mecca of like winter weather in Oklahoma is up in that area. This time it's not going to be.
No.
You know, it's weird to think Woodward and Enid feel like they're in the clear and everybody else isn't.
My wife would always get jealous when there's a snowstorm. She loves snow. She's like, how come Woodward always gets snow?
I know it does. It's Woodward and Enid all up through there.
Want to move to Woodward? She's like, no. But just curious why they always get snow. It's like, well, think about it. They're up north, northwest. So those winter cycles roll through.
I'm looking at National Weather Service. They just put out some maps just now. And it shows likelihood of accumulation of a half inch of sleet.
Where?
Least likely is on a line from Stillwater to Altus, South Oklahoma City, Lawton, Wichita Falls, and back west, least likely. Likely, is I-35, maybe to Duncan and then down to Durant. Most likely is Ada in that area.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of – and then the ice, same way, except for the ice is kind of pushed a little bit further east even into kind of – Altus isn't there. Lawton is. Stillwater down to Lawton. So I have a hard time believing we're going to make it through all four areas in both classes without some sort of delay. And then we'll have to see what happens.
Well, I was voicing my concern of me personally driving down there, and one mom said, "Why don't you just hop on the bus?" Like, yeah, right. I'm not riding a bus full of teenagers to a... That's a big negative for me. Would you ever do that?
Not unless they made me. Can you imagine how awful it would have been to be on a bus going to Grove?
Oh, I felt bad when we passed him on the way home.
I didn't. See ya. That's what you get for being 18. It's not going to hurt as bad when you wake up in the morning like it is for us. Wrapping it up on a Thursday. Thanks again to Tatum Ridling, Canute Trojanettes head coach, for joining us here to talk about her season and then what looking forward to the game on Thursday against Oklahoma Christian Academy. Okay, so one of the big topics of conversation has been the reaction after the game up in Madison, Wisconsin on Sunday with Juwan Howard and the Wisconsin coaches and what happened there at the end of that game.
Can we just get some context for this? I saw the video, didn't watch the game, but I saw the video. What was he upset? What were the coaches upset about? Can you fill us in?
So there was, I mean, it was a blowout as far as, 15, 16, 19-point game, whatever it was there, with under like a minute left. And Wisconsin had their walk-ons and reserves in the game. Michigan was still pressing them. And it came down. There was under 30 seconds left in one possession. And so Wisconsin calls timeout in the backcourt. And they explained later that the point was, first off, Michigan was pressing their walk-ons. So they called timeout to be able to restart that 10-second clock to get it across the half line. If they would,
yep,
because the ball went out of bounds. And if they wouldn't have called timeout, they would only had 4 seconds to get the ball across the half line. So they called a timeout just to reset that clock to 10. And that made Juwan Howard mad. Well, and of course the guard, the coach at Wisconsin, was upset because they were pressing his walk-ons. You know, I mean, it was kind of a back and forth thing. And so that's kind of where it starts.
Okay.
And, you know, then you see what happens in the handshake line and all that. So that's where everything kind of started rising the tension.
Gotcha.
Was because of the timeout on one side and the fact that they were pressing the walk-ons on the other. You know, there's a lot to unpack here. First off, if you're Juwan Howard, you can't do what you did. I don't care what happened. You know, there a lot of people rushing to his defense about Coach Guard putting his hands on him. Listen, he did. There's no doubt, but it was to try to get his attention. Now, at the same time, it was obvious that he had something to say to Juwan Howard about the way that thing went down. And so, you know, that's, you know, both parties, I guess, have some culpability here. There's no doubt. But only one of them has a history of this, and that's Juwan Howard. He got kicked out of the Big Ten basketball tournament last year for threatening to kill somebody from Maryland. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, this is kind of a becoming a pattern of behavior for him versus the other. So I think that's a big reason why he got 5 games. Plus, you know, he punched somebody, open-handed punched somebody. So he gets suspended the rest of the regular season. And that makes sense. I mean, I don't know that it was worth firing him. I don't think it rose to that level. But I will say this. It's getting to the point now where it will be. Kind of 3 strikes, you're out, right? You got kicked out of a game for doing the same thing. Now you get into an altercation. One more time, and yeah, okay, it's done. You know what the thing that of the whole ordeal, you know what bothered me the most?
What's that?
That he pulled down his mask to start yelling.
Oh, yeah. That's a fireable offense.
For some.
Yeah. Now, if it was in the state of Michigan, it probably would have been with that governor.
Why does he have a mask on? He's the only one.
I don't know. I will probably be on the side of an unpopular opinion, and is what it is, but I think it is a fireable offense. I think you strike anybody with the intent to hurt somebody like he did. To me, that means you're gone. I get it. He's the golden child from Michigan. Everybody loves him, and over there anyways. And you know, and I forgot about the Maryland thing. Totally forgot about that till you brought it up. So that's fuel to my fire. I would have, yeah. But you know what's going on? I guess, and I've seen some people be critical of Michigan as a whole. Like, how tolerant are you going to be of this behavior? And you're right. It might be a three strike system. And if his name wasn't Juwan Howard and if it was Joe Smith, would he have been fired? Probably.
I don't know. I think, honestly, the lack of force that he was able to land the punch with, I think, helps him. I mean, he kind of slapped him. You know what I'm saying?
I get all that, but the intent, though, was there.
I know, but if you deck somebody, we all know, if he'd have punched somebody's lights out, he'd have gotten more trouble. Since he kind of slapped him across the face, he's not going, you know, that's just right or wrong. That's just the truth about it. And, you know, I just, it does feel like, to me, that if a player would have done what he did, the punishment would be really similar. So that's where I don't have a problem with it. You know, I mean, heck, there's players that have probably even landed better punches, and I haven't really seen that because that's not the story. You know, the story has kind of been Juwan Howard. But yeah. I don't have a problem with him not being fired. But if something else happens and he's not, then I think you're right. I think that it's 100% maybe a problem, and the people above him need to start fielding questions as to why they're allowing that kind of behavior. And I agree. I just got a text. He said, I think firing him was on the table. I agree with that, but I also don't know that I don't think it was all the way to you have to fire him. And I think Michigan was looking for a way to keep him because of who he is.
Yeah.
And he's had success there.
Yeah, he has. Not this year, but...
Yeah, he's kind of taking the step back this year, but who he is...
And that's probably what part of it. He's frustrated with how the season's gone, and, you know, another loss, and no coach has ever liked to lose. But that's probably part of it. But the pattern, though, is becoming bothersome for me.
Did you see Tom Izzo? Did you see his reaction to this?
No.
Oh, my gosh. I got to find it.
I think I saw something on Twitter, but I was like, is this something old that somebody dug up to prove a point or to push a point across? I don't know. But it was like, yeah, I think I read it.
The conversation it turned to, and I know Jim talked about this yesterday, and anytime it talks about handshakes, he talks about how Oklahoma State never would in baseball and the reasons why they wouldn't. And that's to each their own, I suppose, but I'm not necessarily on that side of it. I understand why Gary Ward thought of it that way.
Can you tell me why?
Because he thought it was fake. You don't sit out there for nine innings trying to beat somebody's tail and then have a real handshake because you're just faking it. And so they wouldn't do it. And guess what? Like Jim said, there was never any of this happening after their games, even no matter how heated it got during the game, and there was times where they fought somebody. This never happened because they didn't do it, which that's a reasonable point. But I'm more on the side. This gets lengthy, but I think it's a pretty interesting take from one Tom Izzo.
of, and in the national broadcasting talk shows, there are suggestions, silly as they may be, that we should do away with the handshake line now.
Oh, my God.
Have you heard that?
Oh, my God, I have. And I do got to comment on that, since that's not insulting to anybody. That, to me, would be the biggest farce, joke, ridiculous nature of anything I've ever heard of. We've already taught these poor 18-year-olds that when you know, you're told to go to class and you don't like it, you can leave. We've already told these kids if you're not happy, you can do something else. We've already told these kids that it's hard to hold them accountable, and now we're going to tell them to not man up and walk down a line on someone who's kicked your butt and have enough class to shake their hand is utterly ridiculous. So if the president said it, I think he's full of it. If the best coach in America said it, I think that gets me way more than this incident. Because,
and he goes on and on from there. It's kind of doubling down on his point. I think of it way more that way. I think it's more out of a respect for somebody doing a good job against you that you have to go shake their hand.
Yes.
You know, this always comes up when LeBron gets beat out of the playoffs. Feels like he's never out there shaking hands. And that's, you know, to each their own. I mean, I'm not going to get fired up over it and say somebody's a poor spot. I don't think that's what it's about necessarily. I think it's more the respect of the opponent and the game and the accountability that you kind of have to hold yourself to, even if you don't perform at the level that you wanted to.
Yes.
And
yes. I don't think it's, I guess it, what you said, it was called fake. Like, a, you know, it's not real because you're trying to beat them for four quarters or nine innings or whatever, and then to go shake their hand. I don't think that's fake. I don't know. I guess it's how I was raised. It's just what you said is, you know, it's out of respect for your opponent. Like, they gave it their best. You know, go shake their hand, tell them good job. An example I saw was after a game this weekend I watched, a young lady had 22 points in a losing effort. And while they're shaking hands, the opposing coach grabbed that young lady, gave her a big hug, and, you know, showing her respect. Because that was respect for the game, respect for that young lady's effort in a losing effort. And it was real to me. And yeah, they got to shake hands. It's for respect of the game, whatever game you're playing. So, you know, just because of one incident doesn't mean we got to stop it.
I agree. It's just the... It's almost like a different type of cancel culture, right? You know what I mean? Just anything that is, and it, to me, it encapsulates what's wrong with all this, with the way society is. Because anything that doesn't happen right for kids, the first thing is insulate them from it. No,
right?
They need to start learning from their mistakes.
Yes, learn from it.
Learn from it.
Don't my kid because, all the time when she messes up. So learn from it.
Yes, learn from the mistakes, because you're gonna keep making them. And the only way that you ever get better and maybe even minimize some of them is by learning from making a mistake and going, you know what? I think I'll do it different this time.
Yeah.
Instead of mommy and daddy rushing up to the school or to the coach's office or wherever else it is because their kid was wronged. Yeah, not always the case.
Yeah.
And more than likely not the case in a lot of situations. It wasn't wronged. It was exactly what they deserved.
Funny text from the text line. Not shaking hands is better than just waving at them.
Well, and Izzo said this too. Izzo said, you know, even last year in the COVID, he said, I don't care if I get COVID. I'm going down there and shaking a kid's hand that deserves it. I'm not going to wave at somebody walking off the court. And he said that was as bad as it got, which, I mean, we all tipped the cap during this.
Do the elbow thing down the – not don't shake their hands, but touch their elbow.
You know, Gary Ward may have been right. If it's going to get that ridiculous, then just don't do it. But
shaking hands is more than just – just shaking a hand and moving on. It's for me, it's respect to the game and respect for your opponent.
I would agree. All right, everybody have a good Tuesday. Bundle up. It's going to be cold the rest of the week. It's been the Skinny on Sports.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.